Did stop, didn't it? Yeah, there it goes. I don't know. I think it's broken. Hello, it's July 27th, 1997. We're in Grand Ronde, Oregon, and I'm talking to Linda Fink. I've just completed an interview with John Fink, her husband. There we go. And I just have a couple of questions just to get started. You can go wherever you want to go. That is, you don't. I don't have this list of questions that you have to respond to. If there's something I think statistically...
You ask hard questions.
Yeah, right, the hard questions right, right there at the very beginning. Yeah.
October 31st, 1945.
And where were you born?
Great Falls, Montana.
And what were your parents' occupation when you were born?
My mom was a mom, uh-huh. And my dad was an Air Force officer.
Was he serving at a base nearby then? At the time?
I'm not sure.
if he told you, he'd have to kill you. Yes. As strategic air command in Montana.
I don't know. Yeah. He was. That was when he was moving frequently from base to base, and I don't know if Mom had just caught up with him at one, and, or you know, I don't know. I think we were only there 3 months or something.
Exactly.
That's where I was born. Then we moved somewhere else. I don't know.
Where did you go to high school?
I went to high school in New York and Illinois.
Mm-hmm. And did you graduate high school in Illinois?
Yeah.
And what were your, was your father retired by then?
No. He was a career officer and was there. He retired while we were in Laos, actually.
Mm-hmm. And did either of them, well, your father had some college education.
No.
He didn't?
No, my mother was an RN, and my dad had, I think, entered the service about his age, in other words, to get in. Anyway, just went up. It was Depression years, so that was just what
he rose through the ranks.
He rose through the ranks, and at that time you didn't have to have a college. He did go to college. You know, they put him through partway in the service. I don't think he has that much. It's kind of been a hard, something that's been uncomfortable for my father, you know, as a law. You have to have a college degree to get anywhere, but he at the time was able to apply to officer training school and get in and, you know, go through Fulcrum, yes.
And governed your choice of where you would go to college?
Well, actually, we were in Illinois at the time, and I had applied and been accepted to UCLA, and that's where I intended to go. Yeah. But as it happened, I got a full scholarship to the University of Illinois, so that's where I went.
Did you have any inkling that you would ever go overseas or do any international work or anything like that before?
I decided I wanted to join Peace Corps, because I remember, when did Peace Corps start up?
Well, after...
I don't remember when I decided I was going to join the Peace Corps, probably what must have been in college. Might have been. I don't remember much of anything past yesterday, so this is going to be really hard.
This is going to be good. No. I could make you remember, but I won't. No, we have ways of making you remember. But the idea was that you were in college. What was your major when you started it?
When I started? Mm-hmm. That's the hardest question.
No, actually we're trying to get to, what were you studying at the time you thought you were going to go into the Peace Corps, for example?
I don't know.
What did you get to? Okay, quick. What's your name? What's your social security number? No, seriously. Let's cut to a chase because it's more important.
Okay.
You applied for the Peace Corps.
No.
Mm-hmm. You applied for IVS, though. We do know that. We have papers to prove it.
I don't know. I know that somewhere in my high school career, I had one of my best friends was I was a total right-winger. My whole family were total right-wing Republican. I was, you know, I supported Barry Goldwater. I campaigned for Barry Goldwater. And this good friend of mine in high school was totally the other side. We got these horrendous fights in high school, and his parents were, you know, my parents said his parents were socialists, and, you know, this was just a... And I became really close friends with his parents, and they had this enormous influence on me, and I, for the first time, saw politics and life from a totally different point of view than I had ever received through growing up in the Air Force. I'd always been a non-violent type person anyway, so was my father, which is really interesting, but anyway...
soldiers fight to keep the peace, not to kill people.
Right.
You know that line.
I know it very well. Anyway, so at some point in high school, in college, I don't know where, I had my little corner of material for Barry Goldwater. I remember one corner of my room. And I don't really know when it all started to...
But your friends, your friends' parents had an influence on.
They definitely had an influence, yes, because I saw. And then in college, of course, you get exposed to all sorts of dangerous ideas.
Dangerous, yes.
Dangerous.
Well, coming from someone who works for the Socialist Science Department for a long time, but I understand that. But when you were, did your parents have any deep religious convictions?
No, they were. You know, I think I've come back to being closer to where they are, which is in an extremely, this sounds strange, but an extremely ethical position. My father is the most honest human mm-hmm. being I've ever met in my life. Mm-hmm. I mean, he just really is. As far as religious faith, you know, my mom, neither one of them, I think, really, I don't think whether there, even if there is a God or not, is of particular interest to them.
It's did they go to church when you were growing
no.
up?
No. I did. Mm-hmm. I went with some friends in New York, and I was mm-hmm. confirmed in the Lutheran faith. But mm-hmm. in college, I didn't actually major in religion for a while. I majored in a lot of things, rhetoric, composition, French, zoology. I ended up in zoology, but...
In zoology?
BS.
A BS. So you see, in the end, I got it up.
Yeah, but my God, when I started it, I have the foggiest
notion. Oh, no, you answered about 15 questions.
Maybe rhetoric and composition.
You finished, you answered 15 questions in there. So you just keep free associating, we'll be just fine. When you met... But you met John about your, what, second or third year?
Second, I was a sophomore.
Second year. Yeah. And how did he strike you?
Oh, he's kind of a nerd. He's kind of a, mm-hmm. he's a real happy-go-lucky guy. He had a friend, though, who was just really gorgeously handsome. But, but Johnny was total opposite from me. I'm a total introvert. Mm-hmm. He's a total extrovert. Mm-hmm. And he just immediately decided, he says, I don't know, what only he said in the tape, but mm-hmm. that he was going to ask me out. So it just sort of... He just kept asking me out, so I wasn't a person who dated.
You met on one of these, a camping trip with a bunch of friends?
Well, actually, we met in the student union. Mm-hmm. We all got together to plan a camping trip.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Because a friend of mine knew Johnny from, he was going with her best friend, that's mm-hmm. that one. And he had a car, that's why we wanted them. It was yeah. our only motive. It was a bunch of women who wanted to go camping and they needed a guy.
Life-changing experience,
car.
Right? Yeah. The guy had the car.
Guy right. had the car. That's
it's my
what
football,
happened.
And the rest follows. you independently though applied for. I don't want to get ahead of myself there. So you met, and mm-hmm. eventually you began dating and what people did in those days. And he graduated.
Yeah.
Or he was towards, and took a job eventually with the Forest Service.
Right, in Wyoming.
And so what was going on then about applying for Foreign Service in those days?
Well, I just figured when I graduated, I was going to go in the Peace Corps. Mm-hmm. But I had another year before I graduated. Mm-hmm. But then I didn't last. I just moved in with him in Wyoming, and then I went to school at Utah State. Mm-hmm. And it was while I was at school at Utah State that I drafted. Mm-hmm. And we had decided, IVS was one of the listed CO things, so mm-hmm. he was going to go in there anyway, but he wanted to do it as part of his military, mm-hmm. his obligation, so he was waiting for them to come through. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so then when we did, we both applied to IVS, because Peace Corps was not approved.
I'd love to get this a little straighter, just so it's clearer in my mind, but you applied for the Peace Corps.
No, I never applied for the Peace Corps.
Well, it may be something that I inferred from something John said.
When it turned out that IVS was what he could go into, then I applied for IVS.
Right, okay. So in other words, you applied for IVS because he did, mm-hmm. but you independently were thinking of doing some
kind
of...
Yeah, I intended to go in the Peace Corps.
And because...
I don't really remember mm-hmm. how this... Except that I wanted to go overseas and I wanted to help people. You know, since the 60s, I mm-hmm. wanted to help
Ask
other people.
Ask not what you can do.
Yes.
Yeah. Another victim of Kennedy ideas. Yeah. Where would we be? Where would our generation be without that?
Yeah.
Gosh knows. An open question. So you applied for IVS. You weren't married then.
We got married just before. We'd applied for IVS. We got married. It was kind of silent. We told you how we got married. Mm-hmm. Sort of sudden.
No, he didn't. He didn't explain his reasons.
Oh, he didn't? Well, what happened was we'd been living together for quite some time, and his boss was Mormon, and he was called in for a performance review for his job, and everything was absolutely wonderful except for his, you know, this is not back when people don't live together. Uh-huh. And
1966? I guess so, yeah.
Not in Wyoming.
No, not in Wyoming.
Coakville, Wyoming is a heart of Mormon country. Okay. Uh-huh. And so.
But he was working for the U.S. Forest Service.
U.S. Forest Service, but his boss was a Mormon, and there were only the two of them in the office, him and his boss, and the secretary, that's it. So his boss told him this just simply wasn't acceptable. I was welcome to move in with them, he and his wife, we were very good friends with them. But I couldn't continue living with him for him to get a good review on his paper. Seemed like the thing to do.
And if anything ever goes wrong, you can blame that guy.
Garth Baxter,
right.
You've been.
Yes, that's right.
We've told him many times that, and he said he's very proud that if he had something to do with us getting married, he's very proud of it.
And so you got married, but this is after you'd already applied. You both applied to IBS.
Yeah, I don't actually know. I mean, don't hold me to this time.
I won't.
I don't know what in the world happened.
We'll have the records, so it's okay. We'll know.
I know that we got married. That much I know.
Yes, that's good. That's good.
And I know we went into IBS, and I know that that happened after we were married.
And you went to Harper's. Did you have the Harper's Ferry experience?
Yes.
Do you have any memories or recollections of the people you met then, or the?
Yeah, I remember that we were late. We missed the plane getting there. And that was in Chicago. It was, we were late arriving. I don't remember a whole lot about it. I told you it was before
yesterday.
No,
most people don't remember anything about it.
I remember playing volleyball. We played volleyball.
Yes. That's good because people remember that it was a socializing experience to meet
other.
It was very
pretty there.
It was pretty. And,
yeah.
And you went off together, actually, to Los Baños, to the International Rice Institute.
That was great.
Why do you think that was good?
Because, they taught you all this different stuff about rice. I've never eaten rice, much less do anything about growing it. So that, and we got to plow behind a water buffalo. That was really fun in a rice paddy, which told me totally irrelevant to anything we did in Laos because we were working with Highland rice farmers who never saw a rice paddy in their lives either. But it was fun. It was a lot of fun. And we did have language training.
In Los Baños?
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's
we had some, I think, didn't we? I don't know. Maybe we didn't.
Probably didn't.
I don't know. Maybe that happened in Laos. Yeah,
I told
you. I don't know anything.
It happened in Laos. You went to Dondok, the school.
Dondok. That's where we met the Bowmans and the Peters.
Uh-huh.
Right. See? Something is coming.
Yes, it's coming back. What was your... Do you have any first impressions of Vientiane when you got there?
No.
And you got there in something like July or August of 67?
Could be.
Well, fortunately, we know.
All I remember about that whole area was some beautiful water lilies in a pond near K6. That was by K6, though. Or K9, which was it? Oh, was it K6 or K9? Maybe that's a dog, K9?
No, K9 is definitely a dog.
The movie.
So I know K9. I don't think there's... according to my memory, I think I remember K7. But now I'm so tired from all these interviews. It could be K3. I'm lucky I remember it was called K, but that's because clicks. Because it's kilometers out of town.
K6 was where the Americans lived behind that barricaded wall. And
well,
they had
maybe
that pretty
it was
pond
K6.
Up front with the water
true.
Lilies.
They did that. And on the wall, the tops of the walls, so that compound.
Yeah, there was barbed wire, some stupid thing.
Broken glass?
I don't know.
Stuff
something
like that.
Very strange. I don't think I ever went in there, but I just remember.
And so you were at the school for... 6 weeks, probably?
That's where I got malaria.
And you got malaria there.
Yeah.
So you got malaria just when you got in country.
Well, we'd gone, I think I got it actually in Paksan. We went down for a, or Pakse.
Pakse.
Phuket. We went down to Savannakhet for a in-service deal. And then I got it because it was the type of malaria that was common in the southern. But that time I had falciparum. I didn't get Vivax till later. Anyway, it's probably why I don't... that's what happened to my mind. There it was. I had this high fever.
High fever.
Yeah. So it's ever since then.
Okay,
I
we can stop that. Now. After the language training, which was to your life, well, of course, you were sick.
Yeah,
and,
see?
My God, you probably didn't hardly get any language training.
That's right.
There you go.
That was the problem.
And, or at least what you did, you would have forgotten after all that.
Right.
And you were eventually stationed in community development together with John. In a town.
Well, village.
A
Song
village.
Hong.
And the name of the village was?
Song Hong.
S-O-N-G.
H-O-N-G.
H-O-N-G. And the nearest town to that was?
Takek.
Tak. In contact with IVS or USAID was Val Peterson.
Right.
And Val had family in that village.
Well, he got married, I think, while we were there. In was from our village. Yeah, so his family was from somewhere.
Her assignment was to develop a crafts industry.
Well, the person before me, Liz Candia, had already started the project. Thank God, I thought when I went over there I had to do something with home ec, and I can't even sew, so this was really scary. I was quite relieved to find that Liz already had this wonderful project started on gathering handicrafts that the women already did, and the men, because the basketry was mostly done by men. The weaving was done by the women, and selling it, because they never needed money before. It was a barter economy, but now that they were down on the road, they didn't, there just wasn't, they couldn't grow all their own rice anymore or all their own food in the village.
So these are people actually living along a highway leading from
Yangcheng down.
Vianchon,
all the way down the coast.
All the way down. And they were spaced about 50 miles apart.
I don't know.
Something like that. But
they were from the hills.
Well, why were they living down there?
They've been moved out by the... They could bomb the Ho Chi Minh Trail. Yeah.
So they told them they had to leave, or...
Well, it wasn't just that. My assistant said, my Lao counterpart said that the Pathet Lao would come into the villages and conscript the men to be in the army, and they didn't want to be in the army, and so they fled, too. So, you know, I don't know how much was that and how much was the Americans saying, if you come down, we will give you rice and help you build your houses if you come down. And, you know, I don't know how much was what. But anyway, they ended up out of the hills and down in the villages.
Yeah, I think it's really unlikely that they came down there, whatever the reason was. I don't think that was a motivating factor. So essentially you had Highlander Lao.
Right.
They're not Hmong.
They're not Hmong. They were ethnic Lao.
Ethnic Lao, Highlander Lao. Did they practice like Swidden agriculture? They would burn rice amongst them and then harvest them and...
Yeah.
Move on after 3 years from their village. There's enough
area. It's a long hike after a while.
But they could do it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, but they needed money.
Right, but they needed money to buy the stuff that they didn't have and couldn't raise. So that was the whole point, was for the, to give them some money by selling their handicrafts. And at first, and she'd set up several villages that we went to. This is what Carol Irison did too, a little bit up north of us, and I'm told. But, and then we, you know, developed a whole bunch. Well, villages kept appearing that hadn't been there before. You know, as people moved in from other areas. But so that was what some point I did, was go to these villages and try to talk these people into selling the food with one another. Actually, we took them on consignment, which was even scarier, and took them, shipped them up to the helping out crafts center there, which is still there and going strong. But they don't get it anymore from the villages. They have it made right there. There are women who make this, and now it's made strictly for what the tourists would buy. At that time, when I was there, we were selling what they actually used, the skirt borders and the shawls and stuff. You
just
know.
Fabulously beautiful.
Oh, wonderful, wonderful stuff.
How come you didn't send some to me? Oh, you didn't know me.
I didn't know you.
Yeah, the crafts cooperative or whatever they call it today, that's still there because... How do you know it's still in operation?
Because
she's been back and
she's been back quite a few times. Carol and Randy have both been back.
See, but they don't know that. People listening to the tape don't know we've already been talking about this for hours. So how did it go? What were your feelings about that? I mean, this cash economy thing you were introducing.
Well, you know, we had a lot of mixed feelings about what we were doing over there. It was
like
very... Well, after a while, we began to, you know, realize or wonder or decided that we were sort of pawns in a little U.S. government game, that we were really stationed there to service whoever happened they needed to have go up and down that road, because we were where they stopped. And we didn't like that. And we didn't, you know, like the whole change of culture that was happening in Laos, but it was really, you know, it was kind of a hopeless situation. I mean, it's going to change. It had to change anyway, because life does change, but it was sad. It was sad to watch, I guess, and like the barter economy, but it wasn't possible anymore, so, and this was sort of like, you know, I felt good about the handicrafts thing, because these people were selling things that they, you know, they were trading, using money. I mean, all money really is it's like a third step. It's just a way to trade for something else, and that's what they were doing. So I didn't, you know, feel that was too awful, and it didn't
have any quotas needed for the villagers. It was just they would provide you with that which was surplus to them, and you'd take it down for sale.
Yeah, basically. And well, they started making stuff for us, but that was. You know, I don't think it was interfering particularly with anything else.
Did the money they get for these things amount to the kind of purposes that they, if they'd be able to purchase with us?
Yeah, I think so. But the things that they had to buy were things like meat. Like, they could go to the market and buy pork. which was pretty expensive for them. Mm-hmm. And the stuff we sold, you know, I always wanted to pay more for it than Sampon did, because, of course, you know, they're all good at bargaining. And mm-hmm. she really knew what things were valued by the villagers, and so she really knew what we should pay. But it was always this, you know, we'd sit there on the porch dickering back and forth with these women. I always felt so terrible, because you think of the hours and hours of labor going into these things, and as far as I'm concerned, we're paying nothing for them, but as far as they were concerned, you know, we were paying a good price. So it's always that hard thing with barter to keep it within the realms of the economy, and yet, because I'm coming from such an outside place where just, I am P-H-O-N-E.
Mm-hmm. And she was your Lao counterpart?
Yeah.
Was she Lao?
Yeah, yeah, she was from our village. Mm-hmm. And she didn't speak any English.
Mm-hmm. Does she have a position in the village? You said counterpart.
Well, in IVS we had, or at least in rural development where we were, we all had counterparts who were kind of like, they basically worked as our assistants, but they were really the people who were supposed to take over when we left, which is what Sampon did. When I left, she was totally in charge of the project. Mm-hmm. And she did until things, you know, by the time I left, though, things had pretty much fell apart. And, mm-hmm. the war was getting much more intense in Laos, and, mm-hmm. and so I don't know how long after we pulled out that kept going, because it was pretty much American run very soon mm-hmm. thereafter. But the handicraft project itself was enough Lao run at that point mm-hmm. to keep going, just not coming out of the villages.
Mm-hmm. Building buildings and...
Building buildings.
Well ties.
Yes.
And the famous water seal tiles.
Which we never actually built any, because that was such a joke.
Was it because of the water table problems?
Yes, because yeah. They were great in the dry season, but he probably said that in the rainy season the water table came up, up and up, until it right at the surface. It's real hard to something to go down a hole when there's no hole. It just floats, so...
Especially when you were working with village women, did they?
They were too polite to do that, really. I'm sure they laughed among themselves. But.
Home meals.
Oh, yeah.
You didn't have a cook.
Oh, no.
That's pretty common, actually, in Laos. In Vietnam and places like that, if you had two people, they offered
really?
A cook. But,
I don't know anybody who did. Because in the rural, as far as I know, I don't know.
With USAID, or what were your relations?
As little as possible.
Well, why as little as possible?
Well... Because they have, you know, their agenda, which wasn't the same as our agenda. And
well, what was your agenda, and why wasn't it the same as USAID's agenda?
Well, ours was simply to try and figure out what we could do to help the people where we were, mm-hmm. and figure out what they wanted and what they needed, and try to do that. Mm-hmm. And USAID had their pronouncements from on high mm-hmm. of what we should do, like water seal toilets mm-hmm. or building this community building, which wasn't a community building at all. It was a place to store... USAID gasoline for the trucks and jeeps that came up and down the road.
Was that what it was for?
Oh, I think so, yeah. Why else would you have this building that's, you know, three times higher off the ground than any other village building there, so you could have all the stuff underneath for their, I don't know. Right? To me, it was the place for the USAID people to stay when they came through. Mm-hmm. Which was probably, he had said, we would like a community center and mm-hmm. we need it. Mm-hmm. Great, but that's not what happened. Mm-hmm. USAID said, the village needs a community center. Build it. Mm-hmm. So that was, we felt very uncomfortable about a lot of that stuff. It was easier for me because I was doing something that I really thought would help them, the handicraft thing. Mm-hmm. And Johnny felt very conflicted, I think.
Where did you feel IVS stood in this between USAID and you?
Well, we felt we were... IVS, we were part of IVS. That's why we liked Val, because he'd been IVS and he was on our side. And so, he was a great guy to work with, because he would just say, just forget that.
What would you say, forget that?
Well, like the stupid stuff about the evacuation procedures. Uh-huh. Oh my God, they told us that if there were any problems in the area, that we would be evacuated mm-hmm. by, CIA, no doubt, but I don't know if they said CIA, but anyway, that's the only people who were there, so. And we were supposed to put out this big banner that they gave us, this big square thing. I can't remember what it had. I don't even know what happened to it. But anyway, we're supposed to put this on the top of our hut, the house where we built our own house. And And the helicopter would then be able to spot us and come pick us up. But we just thought this was hilarious because, well, if we have this big thing on our house saying this is where the Americans are, you know, somebody else is going to find that house before the helicopter does. I mean, this is just a joke. So fortunately, we had, you know, a wonderful village, and whenever the Pathet Lao were in the area, they would ask us to leave. They wouldn't say why. They would just come in and, you know, sit down and talk to us for a while and say, you know, you really need a vacation. Why don't you go to Takheg for a couple days, like tonight, and come back? Oh, that's a good idea. Okay. So we would go to Takheg, and pretty soon a villager would come down and say, oh, we'd love to have you, but we'd miss you. Why don't you come on back? So we'd go back to the village. You know, we felt very safe because the villagers, you know, we were would have been an embarrassment to have there when we were not supposed to be there. Mm-hmm. And so we were very happy to leave, and they were very happy to tell us when to come back, and everything was fine.
Did you feel you were ever expected to provide intelligence, like to USAID?
It's a good thing, because we weren't very. No, nobody ever asked us anything. I think they knew we were young and stupid. We wouldn't have.
Well, see, the problem is, you know, everyone had their own perspective. A lot of IVSers, some IVSers in Laos came to the conclusion they really were being used and
to build support.
Yeah, and
but we felt like we were just the place where they needed a body, so when people stopped by, you know, they had a jeep and gas and a radio and the facilities they needed it every so often along that highway. Mm-hmm. That's how we felt we were used. I don't think anybody was trying to get any information out of us because we didn't have any to give. Mm-hmm.
Did you ever hear about the stationing of IVS people in what was called the forward areas?
Yeah.
What was that about?
The non-married people were allowed to be stationed in the forward areas. Married people couldn't be in the forward areas, I guess if they were or something. Anyway, they were supposed to be less secure, closer to where there was actual fighting. Mm-hmm. And there was, that's where Chandler was when he was killed.
Mm-hmm. Chandler Edwards,
mm-hmm. Yes.
And what were they supposed to be doing in these forward areas?
Well, they had the same, you know, they had various jobs just like we did, doing development or building wells or, I don't know, different things, but just in areas that were closer to the action. Well, they all knew that, but these are all young, dumb kids, right? They're 18, 19, 20, 22. Mm-hmm. Well, except there was one guy I know who was scared, and he was in a fire attack in the village, but we knew another guy who was in the same fire attack, and he thought it was a big joke, but that other guy, I think, was Chan, so it wasn't such a big joke. But.
Yeah, he did express, he went to a meeting, I think, where he said, actually someone, oh, I think it was Fred Brantford. No, it was Mike McDonald. One of the other said, you know, I'd like you to reflect on this. When I talk to, especially the IVSers who went over to USAID, when they finished their contract, these are people who need stuff. They have legitimate needs. We have resources. We've got people who are not members of the U.S. government, you know, IVS, who have the time and the willingness. USAID standpoint, that's good. Because from USAID's point of view, philosophically, they're helping people who need it internationally. That's their job. USAID to the government. People receiving these kinds of assistance, governments opposed to communism, hey, communism's bad. So what's wrong with us doing what we're doing? The good guys and bad guys here, yeah, but there's also just good work that needs to be done. Who cares about the politics when you're just starting a crafts program? Why would anyone think there's anything wrong with what's happening in Laos? All these people like Val, and I think Val, I think, had deeper thoughts. But there were a lot of IVS personnel in Laos who worked for USAID, and that's the way.
I think people like Val simply wanted to stay in the country, and that was a way to do it. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I think he had a lot of conflicted feelings too. I know you probably already interviewed Val.
A long, long conversation.
I think it was very hard for him.
And Barry?
No, heard a lot about him, but I don't know. Maybe I wouldn't remember, but not that I know.
he was just IBS, who became worked for USAID and forever after that. Val was doing, which is this is my job. I got to tell you this. Now you can do this because I know what you're here for.
Yeah.
And so Carol, who was up the road from you, wrote this wonderful book, Field, Forest, and Family, Women's Work and Power in Rural Laos. Mm-hmm. What were your relations like with the women that you dealt with? Did you feel that they were getting empowered from this craft program? Do they need to feel empowered?
That was sort of a difficult thing, especially it was difficult with Sampon because there's very, you know, it's a very structured society. Here comes the hatred. And they had their role. They really were the, I mean, my feeling was they were the power. Mm-hmm. But, you know, the men always sat in front, and the women always sat at another table and did the serving and everything else. But in fact, the women made the decisions, as far as I could tell. Mm-hmm. And you're really changing things by putting money into the hands of women, which was a little bit of a conflict. However, the way they were using the money was for buying stuff in the market, which they would be doing anyway. Mm-hmm. They would be bartering or trading or raising it. So that was okay. It was a little harder with Sol Plum because she was being educated and wanted to be educated, and I was always afraid that she was marriageable. She felt like she was already unmarriageable because mm-hmm. she was old enough, mm-hmm. married at that point, mm-hmm. that she... I don't know what happened to Sol Plum. I have never found out what happened to Johnny's counterpart. He was Thai, actually, though. Mm-hmm. But I don't know...
What happened to him?
Well, he worked for... Well, Johnny could tell you more. I can't...
Please. Yeah, go ahead.
He lost a leg in a motorcycle accident in Vientiane, and then he... I think he worked in Laos, and we heard from somebody else that he had, though. He'd gone to Thailand, close to him, after we left for a while. Mm-hmm. We never got anything back from somebody. And at the time we left, of course, things were really dicey, and we mm-hmm. didn't... We really felt it would be dangerous for Sol Plum for us to keep in touch with her. Mm-hmm. So, and we were right on the border of Thailand, and we figured that she would go to Thailand. We're relieved to find out when Carol and Randy first went back to Laos, that a lot of the people that we worked with in the Royal Law government were now working for the communist government.
That's because they were probably working for the communist government then, too.
They might have been.
Or, yeah, well, I just... Two, the accountant, the Lao Chinese accountant for IVS, when Laos was taken over by the Pathet Lao, became the accountant for the bureau in Vientiane, and was actually even protected when he got in trouble for reading a Chinese newspaper, which was... But the point is that we always joked if IVS was the CIA, they hired the CIA's payroll officer to handle the payroll for the Prime Minister's office. Essentially, they needed somebody who knew these skills.
Yeah.
So there's no kidding. I mean, if those people were recycled, it really was because they needed them.
I think it was the same for the French. I mean, the law, basically, they don't really care. I mean, just as long as they can live their life, it doesn't matter if the French were in charge or the Americans or the, you know, Vietnamese, who, whatever. Mostly the rural Lao weren't real concerned about who the government was as long as they could do their own thing. I think they're, you know, the Hmong, the northern tribes are very different.
Wanted to live their normal lives as well.
Yeah, they did too, but they knew they had
much
to fight
choices,
off the Vietnamese.
Mm.
Well, I'd rather not fight.
And
just do their thing.
Mm. The interesting, you really should go back. I realize that's hard, but financial. But it's a...
Like I said, you know, at first they were not able to travel the outlying areas, but mm-hmm. they have been able to more recently. Mm-hmm. And they went through Song Hong, and basically nothing had changed. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Still didn't get finished? The community center?
I don't know. She didn't say anything about that, but our house, the house we built,
the bamboo house.
Yeah, the Ta Seng was living in, which was good. That mm-hmm. was the village chief. Mm-hmm. So that was nice. I was glad to hear that.
Mm-hmm. So. We're trying to build golf courses on the upper Mekong, the Japanese. Japanese investors. So.
Oh, yeah, they got
to
have
something
golf
may change. Yeah, oh, they have to. And cheap, too.
Yeah. Because
the greens fees are killing them. Well, with declining profits in Japan. Can't go to Hawaii anymore, you know.
Yeah.
No, they can't. But we were there about a year, and John was building the community center, and the stairwell collapsed on him.
Yeah.
And he ended up going to Bangkok and then to Clark. Did you stay in Laos while he went on this peregrination?
Yeah, he went back and forth to Bangkok quite a few times mm-hmm. trying to figure out what was going on, and before they finally shipped him off to the Philippines. Mm-hmm. And I stayed in the village mm-hmm. until... They moved me out of the village. At first, Val was gone by then, and there was this other character in charge. And
do you remember who that was? But you weren't when you left. You weren't replaced by another IVS team.
No, I stayed until because it was about 3 months after they terminated Johnny, and so I left. That they pulled everybody out mm-hmm. of Laos. So they pulled me out before that into Ta Kek. For the last couple months, I was else out too, mm-hmm. and I wouldn't go for a long time. But finally,
you back to Takek, did they then pull you back to Vientiane?
No.
You never worked in Vientiane.
No,
just back
just
in Takek.
Takek.
And then from Takek, about when did you leave? When did you leave Laos for the last time?
I don't know.
That's okay, we have it.
Good.
No, well, you got there and it's something like July of 67, and you must have left
summer of 68. Johnny may have gone in June or so to Bangkok in the handicraft program from there, but it was very difficult because it was light. There was nothing for me to, I couldn't
get off
the
villages. I wasn't aware. Oh, I'll have to, again, I'm pretty tired too, but yes, but they weren't working for IVS anymore. There were still a lot of IVSers left in Laos, but they weren't working for IVS. Then when the Pathet Lao took
really? Place, oh, that's
so
neat.
That is neat when you think about it.
Yeah.
And she was in Washington. She's on the IVS alumni list. You really should get the alumni list. Because for 96... Oh, before we do this, because this worked fine with him, but... Well, we're done, you know. Is there anything... lying. Is there anything, like that? Gee, I wonder why he didn't ask me about, like that, and Lao Lao, and something that meant a lot to you while you were there that I haven't asked about.
Well, so he told you all about Bossy ceremonies.
No, he didn't. You can talk about Bossy.
Well, yeah, we didn't know anything about this when we got there, but it's wonderful... We had Bossy ceremonies then for our various houses and everything else when we got back here because it seemed like such a great idea.
Mm-hmm. What is a Bossy?
Well, it's a ceremony where you bless the house and chase out all the bad spirits and you let all the good spirits in. Mm-hmm. And you tie strings around your wrist to keep the good spirits in, chase the bad spirits out. And it's very important in the village and people go around with these rotting strings on their wrists for days on end. Mm-hmm.
Excuse us, before we had to stop there for a split second, we were talking about Bossy. That's B-A...
C-C-I, I guess.
C-C-I,
I don't think I've ever spelled it.
Uh-huh.
Anyway, so we had that when we built the first house we lived in Laos was already there, and it was full of termites, and I don't know, dust out of our eyes when we got up in the morning. Anyway, so the second house we built ourselves. We built the framework. The villagers did the wall weaving because we were not really good at weaving bamboo yet. But a ceremony for the house when we moved into it, and all the villagers pitched ceremonies for everything. Our village was one of the biggest party villages in the area. Song Phong was known as the drinking capital of our part of Laos, and they made the best Lao Lao, or the best Lao Hai. Not Lao Lao was more sophisticated than they were. But they made the best Lao Hai anywhere.
That's a beer.
Yeah, it's a rice beer.
Rice beer.
Where they put the rice hulls in the water and just stomp them down to ferment, and they stick these long straws in and fill it up with water, and they have contests of how much anybody can drink. And they have little water buffalo horns that they have. The ladies in the village were the absolute best at this. They were just phenomenal. They could really swig that Lao Hai. And that was, we had a lot of fun. I mean, neither of us had ever drunk alcohol before we went to Laos. And in our village, if you didn't drink with the villagers, this is what Johnny's conclusion that he came to, you didn't work with them because that was just part of their culture. Mm-hmm. And so we did. Johnny really, he is so funny when he's high and could really speak Lao, which he couldn't speak very well any other time. So we had a great time. I was talking about going to Pilan Sao, or trying to get him to go to Pilan Sao, which is go play with the girls, go find girls. I hope! No. Very playful village, very, a lot of fun. And the army would come through periodically and have their dances and invite us up and have their stocks in them that you shake and whatever was handy. We had a wonderful time. They loved to dance. And so we had a lot of, in the off times when they're not out in the rice fields, we had a lot of good parties. But I was, I remembered when Johnny was here about the, one of the things we were trying to do, one of our missions was to get people to boil the water before they drank it, because a lot of the disease in the area was because of all the water was, of course they just got it out of the river, and so convincing them to boil the water before they used it was not an easy task, and so we finally came up with, was that if you boil the water, it drives the bad spirits out. And that seemed to have an effect. more of an effect than anything else we said. Mm-hmm. Right? That's stupid reason, because I don't know anything about bacteria or germs or anything else or little organisms floating around. That wasn't too impressive. But I think once they, I don't know what happened later, but I'm sure if they did start drinking only boiled water and cooking in only, they would like boil water for tea, but they'd still wash their vegetables and stuff in that water that hadn't been boiled and realize that they were having less diarrhea and less illness that they might stick. Because our village, when we did a survey, that was our time, actually, Sampon and I did, and how long we've been married, and all those kind of statistical kinds of things. Mm-hmm. I don't remember who we were doing. It's really kind of scary because most of the women would say they'd have 12 or 15 to give them birth control pills because they don't know. They think it's like the morning of type mm-hmm. thing. And they can't continue getting them, so they can't take them amongst the women that didn't want to have any more pregnancies and mm-hmm. didn't know how to stop. Just to get rid of the bugs. Banned in the U.S., but could ship it overseas and let them use it indiscriminately.
Of course, you didn't issue DDT.
No, but it was there. Uh-huh. I don't know where they, I don't know who was issuing it. Uh-huh. We weren't issuing anything.
Did you try to stop them from
doing Yeah. But it worked, it got rid of the bugs, so. Uh-huh. How can you tell them about any kind of long-range problem? Or it was pretty difficult.
What was the mood, I think, amongst other, I know you didn't have contact with a lot of IVSers, but what was the attitude and mood of IVSers in Laos while you were there? Did it change?
I really wasn't around other IVSers, mm-hmm. so I really don't know. To one of those, mm-hmm. yeah, we went to one. I felt very, I totally adopted everything Lao when we got over mm-hmm. there. I wore the Lao clothes and had to pretty much drop everything American. I really wanted to immerse myself in the culture and mm-hmm. And I really felt uncomfortable around Americans. So I felt out of place when I left the village. And I remember one time when must have been the ambassador's wife, or who this woman was, but anyway, there were people who were supposed to know, because when you first get there, you're supposed to go to some kind of meeting. Mm-hmm. They have a party and you meet the USAID. Those people came while we were in the village for a tour of the village, and I had no idea who this woman was, who was along, and the only other American. I didn't see very many American women, so I asked her who she was. She mm-hmm. would have been a thing, and I hadn't gone to this coffee that I was supposed to go to mm-hmm. at the beginning.
Maybe you had malaria.
Yeah, maybe. Chances are I didn't go because I didn't want to go. So, I don't know. Yeah, I remember barely the meeting, but I didn't really participate. Tell you anything about that?
Can't tell you anything about that. So, Gary was injured and had to go for back surgery in the Philippines. And
Johnny,
what did I say?
You said Gary.
Oh, that's because I'm back at
Gary
yesterday.
Somebody else.
Talking Gary Peters. Yeah. Johnny went back to the States. His contract was terminated by IVS because they had no use for a cripple. And what was the circumstance?
Well, the circumstances were that the doctor said he couldn't ride on bumpy roads and jeeps. Mm-hmm. And without riding in bumpy roads and jeeps, mm-hmm. there wasn't too much he could have done in Laos, because mm-hmm. that's all there were.
No.
So they terminated him. Mm-hmm. And so they gave me a
computer. To you anyway.
Yeah.
Well, I think I don't think IVS wanted to be responsible for dividing up a married couple.
Yeah.
Probably. Even if they wanted to get married.
Yeah.
And so you came back to the States, mm-hmm. and as I understand it, because Johnny was trying to finish graduate school. Did you finished also your BA?
No, he wasn't going to graduate school.
Oh, you finished your BA with Utah State, but
no.
through Illinois.
Yeah, no.
Yeah.
I had a little bit more to go, so I went to Washington State. Uh-huh. Moved up to Washington.
Oh, that's right. That's
and
right.
I finished there.
You finished there and
my BS.
Your BS. Eventually, Randy got. Actually, you moved to Landon, Oregon.
Now you've got it as Randy.
Now it's Randy Iverson.
Now you're thinking towards
tonight. You can see where I'm going. Yeah, that's
you're
right.
Ready for the next
I'm ready
interview.
To go. Johnny, Randy, Gary. They're all E's. It's the end of the name. I have another swig of the. Whatever it is, the swill here. This is good swill. It looks like swill, doesn't it? It's kind of swill, green swill. Eventually, he was looking for a job and a place.
Yeah.
But you had family had some land here. Your family had some land.
Yeah, my parents had land near Salem, so we moved mm-hmm. onto their land for a while until we applied. I applied for as a position as a wildlife biologist, and that was what I it was in zoology because they didn't have wildlife biology at U of I. I'd spent mm-hmm. the last part applied for jobs at the same time and agreed that whoever got one first, that's where we'd go. So he got one first, so that's where we went, to Salem.
And then eventually, and you stayed home.
Uh-huh.
And
started to write.
To write, and you wrote books on, you wrote a column.
Yeah.
A humoresque column.
A two column.
Two column.
Oh, first I just was writing freelance for a while, but now, yeah.
And you've written, your book is coming out?
12 or 13 years.
Your first book is entitled?
Life in the Goaling.
And it's published by?
Al-
The royalty check must have been really big. Yes. I don't remember the name of the publisher. Yes.
I took over, see, the publisher gave up, and so I sold myself.
Uh-huh. And teachers.
Yeah.
Having raised two boys.
Right, yeah. So I'm now an expert.
You're now an expert.
Yes.
You know it all.
Yeah.
That's good. Who's publishing that?
I am. Triple F Press.
Triple F
Press. I'm doing it myself.
You're doing it yourself, yes.
Yes, absolutely.
Because, a self-starter still.
Yeah. Well, I just couldn't, the first publisher I have. We had disagreements on things, and so I just wanted to do it myself, my own way, and you make more money that way if you're willing to put out the work to market, because basically nowadays the publishers don't do any work anyway.
Mm-hmm.
The author has to do all the promotion, and so if you got to do all the promotion anyway, right now there's like 7 big publishing houses left.
Mm-hmm.
They bought up, you know,
everything.
Everything.
Yes.
But now the small publishers are starting to take over, the little regional publishers are starting to...
It'll change again.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you look back at your IVS experience, you know, what do you see, this giant black hole of failure? No, I mean, what do you think about your IVS experience?
Well, I feel sorry for the poor villagers that had to put up with us, but it was great for us.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we came out with a whole different perspective on life and on how little it takes to live, so we were never, ever fear poverty again or fear... You know, doing without, because we know how to do without. We had no running water or electricity or anything else, and we lived just fine. Of course, we were young and stupid. No, we just, you know, we've learned how to live. And we've also learned how to, you know, accept other people where they're coming from. Their own culture. I wish our children would go and live in another culture. You know, not go visit a place, but go live in another culture, because there's no other way.
Mm-hmm.
To really learn, you know, to fit inside their culture and, you know, help them from what they need help with and not what I think they ought to have help with, which was the whole seal toilets and throw them at them. And so that's been, you know, this ESL experience has just been absolutely wonderful. I'm a volunteer tutor, except there's no class, so I'm the teacher. No, yeah, I'm not really official.
No. It's just whether it's just
a
formality.
Yeah, I'm not a real teacher.
No, you are a real teacher.
No, I mean,
you're
I don't
just
have
not certified.
A degree, yeah,
yeah, that's, you're an uncertified real teacher.
Yeah, and one of my students got her citizenship last year,
and
her husband. She just was able to sponsor her husband, and I knew nothing about the INS before, and I've been able to help, you know, them wend their way through that incredible mass of red tape and paperwork. Well, because we both become to believe that you can work through the system and get there, which I. You know, haven't always believed that through the system, and we've gotten there. And it's not easy, but I remember that family legal one of these days, and we'll do it.
Hurry up before the next administration.
No,
you never know.
This administration is bad enough.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Oh, well.
I don't see how it could be any worse.
That's what people always say.
In our own community, I think it's like we had a party yesterday, a neighborhood party, which not very many people, because you know, people are moved in. And it's just a different tenor. Well, you know, the media tries to make you all scared.
Kunanan is here.
Yeah. So, you know, our whole thing has been, when we got here, the people before us had a gate across the driveway, and they warned us about who in the neighborhood were thieves and to lock everything up. Everything. You know, we tore the gate down. We opened everything up. We never locked anything.
Uh-huh.
Everybody is welcome down here. Everybody knows it. You know, I sell milk from the goats, and people come when we're home or not, walk in the door, get out of the refrigerator. We've never had any trouble with anybody.
Mm-hmm.
And we have friends from this neighborhood who we visit in prison.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there are some, you know, various sorts of people around here, but they don't give us a hard time.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I think that a lot of that attitude that we have of openness and acceptance and just has, you know, they'll see we're right. Well, maybe not, but anyway, we'll just keep on keeping on.
See, of course, I asked John these questions. I got his name right.
Yeah, that was good. That
asked
was
John
good.
These questions about, and you've been on the IBS alumni list, and although you have given some money to IBS over the years.
Here and there.
Here and there. But Don Luce is no longer director of IBS.
I don't know.
That's okay. That's just a measure of just how much, not interest, but.
To be good friends with them. Mm-hmm. And so, and Gary and Brendan, we didn't know that well, but we know them through Bovers. They were, oh, this is a really neat thing. I'm glad they're doing this. We'll ship mm-hmm. off $20 or something because we mm-hmm. think this is a really good deal. That's mm-hmm. all we can, so that we're not feeding the war machine because we're not paying taxes into mm-hmm. it because we make so little money that we mm-hmm. don't pay
right.
many taxes. So that's how we get away.
Gee, that's a good idea. And I think my parents have always already achieved that, and now I guess it's up to me now. The Bowmans, which family is that?
Ivan and Karen Bowman. They were in education in mm-hmm. Laos at the same time. They're divorced now, too.
It's now like the Peters and...
The Iresons.
The Iresons. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Not you.
No, not
good.
Us. No,
make sure that's on the record.
Out. Yeah, no, we're still married. Last
still
I knew.
Married affectionately so. Yes. And, well, that's nice. Okay, well, I want to talk to you about the Bowmans, maybe get their address, who knows, because they didn't, they're not one of them.
Oh, thanks.
It's a pleasure talking to you. I hope we can speak again about this if, when you suddenly remember something really important that we didn't say. But thank you very much.
Thank you.
Yeah.